to begin with a couple of readings. One of them you're going to be very familiar with. It's the Bible reading. I'm going to be reading from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, and a continuum of 10 through 14. This is from the Inclusive Bible. It's the story of Moses as he discovers the burning bush. Now, Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness, and he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush, and he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, yet the bush was not consumed. Now, jumping on to verse 10, where God begins to speak to Moses. Now go, I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to the Pharaoh and lead the children of Israel out of Egypt? God answered, I will be with you. And this is the sign by which you will know that it is I who have sent you. After you bring my people out of Egypt, you will all worship at this very mountain. But, Moses said, when I go to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your ancestors has sent me to you, if they ask me, what is this God's name? What am I to tell them? And God replied, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, I am as I am. This is what you will tell the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. May you have blessing and understanding through reading of those words. I'd also like to share a very short reading from one of my theological pillars in the world for me, his book, Why Christianity Must Change or Die, is one of the most influential books I have ever read. And his name is John Shelby Spong. I was lucky enough to actually, it's so strange for that book to mean so much to me. And then, years later, I find myself writing for his newsletter. Still kind of crazy to me that that has happened. But I was very fortunate, and I'm very fortunate, as we all are, to learn from him. This is a quick quote from his very final lecture. Here he says, the Christianity of the future cannot live inside the doctrines of the past. Doctrines are never a description or a definition of our God experience. My experience is my ability to perceive God. But the nature of God is beyond my ability to fully describe.
Bob Dylan. Oh, my name is America.
Sometimes 10 full punches, did he? The paper for that book. I don't remember hearing all the words so clearly before. My message today is entitled On a Less Definable God. Religion prefers a definable God. By definition, one of the purposes of religion is to draw us closer to God. And the way religion has typically been practiced, this implies some degree of knowing God. To know God, we must be able to define God. The problem is, in the act of defining God, we're limiting God. What kind of God is a limited God? Is that even God at all? For me, that is one of the biggest downfalls to most religions. They tend to be rooted in our need for a personal God, one that's actually knowable. Ultimately, a knowable God is ultimately a slippery slope. If we know God, we can begin to define God. And those who are tasked with defining God can then begin to shape God. And in shaping God, we can control certain things about God. What kind of God is a controllable God? Is that a God at all? It seems to me that religion, by its very nature, is predestined to feed us a less than nuanced, less than thorough, less than authentic understanding of God. In short, a God that is less than God-like. Our need to personalize and understand and ultimately control God removes much of the divine from God. It makes me wonder if Jesus told us parables to teach us about God because they are more open-ended than just stating facts about God, being defining God. It seems to me that that open-minded understanding of God is also what the composers of the Jewish scripture were trying to teach us with our reading from today and the story that they told about God in a burning bush. A story which God itself proclaims the divine name to be Yod Heh Vav Heh, or I am, or I will be what I will be. The name of God is open-ended, practically undefinable. I even argue that the storyteller made them so intentionally undefinable that it should preclude most of the anthropomorphizing of God that happens throughout the scriptures as well as throughout history and through religions. Perhaps that is the God that Albert Einstein said he believed in when he said that he believed in Spinoza's God. Now, we've talked about him before, but as a reminder, Baruch Spinoza was one of the most important philosophers of the early modern period of philosophy. At the age of 24, he really got at it early. At the age of 24, the religious leaders of his time excommunicated him for, quote, monstrous deeds and abominable heresies. Now, it turns out no one's quite sure what these monstrous deeds and abominable heresies actually were. They never named them. But based on his later writings, it doesn't take much imagination to summarize that they had to do with his early philosophical and theological ponderings, which ran heavily against the teachings of the religion at the time. So the religious leaders gave him the boot. Since Spinoza's God stood over and against much of what traditional Judeo-Christian theology taught, creation, in his view, creation was not something separate from God, which God caused to happen out of free will. Rather, creation was God, in that it was of God and from God, and of the substance of God. It formed because it could do no other. Creation flowed out of the nature of God, out of the allness of God, out of the everythingness of God. The philosophical, theological impact of that understanding is massive. Creation just is. It wasn't created with a specific purpose as traditional Judeo-Christian Christianity taught, but rather it was its full purpose. The full purpose of creation was being. Just being. Extend that a little bit further. It should no longer follow that an anthropomorphized understanding of a God who stands in judgment over us is necessary anymore. More or less a rational presumption. Would God need to stand in judgment of God's self with all creation as God? It makes no sense. And in terms of modern religion, much of our teachings and time, well, that they're spent in the space between hope and fear. It is in those very spaces that much of our beliefs and superstitions are born. The tension between hope and fear gives rise to some extremely problematic and hurtful emotions. Those very emotions can become prohibitive to fully experiencing joy and peace and love in this life. So I have to say, Spinoza's God seems much more rational and life-giving than the version of God that organized religion gives us, which has been grown out of the space between hope and fear. Unlike the gods of many religions, Spinoza's God is not a God of judgment, in need of adoration and obedience. Instead, Spinoza's God is the substance from which all is formed, from which all flows. It is to be experienced, not feared. It calls for our curiosity and our fascination, not our adoration. And in that, Spinoza's God is understood through philosophy and science rather than through religious institutions and personal relationships with God. Now, for some, that God flies in the face of some of the attributes that they associate with God. As an example, that understanding of God has no room for miracles. All that is from God. The laws of reality, say physics, stem from and are of the substance of God. How then can we expect God to bend the laws of reality just for us, or worse, just for us and not for others? That also implies that the way many modern prayers approach God are useless. Flinging out wishes that ask for reality to be altered, flinging those out to the source from whom reality extends, is futile at best. See, for Spinoza, rather than asking for favors from God, our focus should be on understanding what God wants. And we do this through science, philosophy, psychology. Rather, a creative and beautiful social media post written by Michelle Fortes several years ago provides what I imagine to think of as a contemporary quote from Spinoza that it wasn't. But it does sort of sound like it, on what that God looks like, and what that experience of life with a God like that looks like. So for me, I have to admit, it leans a little heavily, if you're familiar with the writings of Milton Walsh, kind of leans towards that. And ironically, it anthropomorphizes God a little bit. But I appreciate the extrapolation of her understanding of Spinoza's God and what that could look like, and what God might tell us. So hear this. Stop being prayed and giving yourself blows to the chest. What I want you to do is to go out into the world and enjoy your life. I want you to enjoy, you sing, have fun, enjoy everything that I have done for you. Stop going to those gloomy, dark, and cold temples that you built yourself and that you say to be my home. Stop blaming me for your miserable life. I never told you you were a sinner. Stop having me so scared. I do not judge you, nor criticize you, nor anger me, nor bother me, nor punish me. I am pure love. I have made you absolutely free. There are no prizes or punishments. There are no sins or virtues. No one carries a record. You're absolutely free to create in your life a heaven or a hell. Respect your peers and don't do what you don't want for you. The only thing I ask is that you pay attention in your life, that your alert status is your guide. This life is the only thing there is. Here and now is the only thing you need. Express your joy. That's the way to praise me. Sort of a beautiful expression of what life can be, or even what life should be. The difficulty comes in our humanity. We sort of have two approaches to life that pulls us in different directions. Spinoza defines them as the aspect of time and the aspect of eternity. Our immediate experiential life encourages us towards a time-bound, more person-centered view of life. A great deal of religious teachings about God are based on this here and now perspective. On the other hand, our intellect and our ability to reason draw us towards a fuller understanding of existence and our place in it. Or as Spinoza poetically puts it, they invite us to take part in eternal totality. As it turns out, approaching life through the aspect of eternity rather than the aspect of time will actually guide us in a way that will make it easier to to follow the lessons of great spiritual teachers like Jesus. When we focus our attention too finitely on the here and now, the things that bring us the most joy most immediately, when we focus on the things that bring us that joy, happiness, and satisfaction, tends to be things that impact us individually positively. Just individually. They also tend to be based more on emotion than on reason. Conversely, when we focus on the eternal nature of creation and the divine, the things that bring us the most joy, happiness, satisfaction, tend to be the things that impact the universal good the most positively, rather than the individual most positively. They also tend to be based more on reason than on emotion. Now, I'm not arguing for a purely logical, theological outlook. But I am suggesting that a more rational, theological outlook is much more likely to enable us to follow the lessons of Jesus and other great spiritual teachers. As Spinoza put it in his Theologico-Politico treatise, he said, "I have often wondered that persons who make a boast of professing the Christian religion, namely love, joy, peace, temperance, and charity to all men, I have often wondered how they should quarrel with each other so with such rancorous animosity, and display daily towards one another such bitter hatred that this, rather than the virtues they claim, is the readiest criterion of their faith." This more rational, eternal understanding of theology should not only lead us to more readily put into practice things like equality and love and peace and justice and joy, but it should challenge us to dig deeper into a more open understanding of God.
This is George Harrison.
Give me peace on earth, give me life.
Several years ago, there was a popular article, I can't remember if it was Time Online that it was written for. It was at a time when a few other of us were writing for things like Time Online about finding value in the spiritual but not religious, the folks who were leaving the church. And this particular article took the opposite approach to a degree and made some good points. But it basically started off as any idiot can find God in the sun or in a sunset. So this is the response that I wrote. It's a prayer, a reflection, or even a meditation, if you'd like to receive it that way, to the concept of that it's better to find God in the messiness of a church than it is in the sunset. Let's bow our heads again. I suppose I'm one of those idiots who can find God in a sunset. I see this thing we call God in the swooping play of seagulls and in the quiet stillness of deep waters. I have heard a silent hymn sung by the light of the Milky Way. And I have heard the choral response of cicadas give thanks for life. I've sensed something larger than us in a soft ocean breeze and been pulled along the waters by the billowing gusts of creation. I have seen what I name God in the sunset, in the darkness of a cave, from a mountain overlook, in the batting of the hummingbird's wings, and in the branches of a craggy oak tree. I must admit, there are times when I find some sense of the divine there more readily than I do in a church. May I discern more clearly whether something of the divine is to be found more in creation or in things created by humanity. Am I more likely to connect with this thing that is all at once larger than me and somehow planted deep within when all of the human-made layers are stripped away? Or am I more likely to find it in the messiness we create? I suspect that it is in one that I am more likely to find and understand God, and in the other that I am more likely to find and understand the messiness of humanity, and in the process, the messiness of me. I will continue to strive to find that place where the me-centeredness of humanity troubles my relationship with the divine less. I will continue to strive to find the places and spaces where I am less in the way of sensing that which is larger than me and connects us all. May I be overwhelmed as I look into the heavens. As I see the immensity of the universe, may my spirit be found in all. As I see the complexity of the world around me, may I be humbled by the beauty of creation and of its evolution. As I see myself, may I be reminded that I am part of it all. I am made of dirt and stardust. I am part of creation, part of complexity, part of the beauty, and in, through, and by it all, I am connected to that which we call God. May I continue to find something of God in the sunset. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and creation, recognizing that we are one. And may your life be full of love and happiness. And may your actions and words share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.
Sinead O'Connor. She's got some. And just like Baruch Spinoza, she died this week. She's just a teeny little bit older than me. She's Irish, and she experienced intense abuse for being a spirited girl by her family in the Catholic Church in Ireland, where she witnessed horrors of institutionalized abuse inflicted on women. Too horrible to describe right now. When she was 21, Ireland was beginning to talk about church abuse, and she became a propelling force in that conversation, fighting for abortion rights, equal rights for people of color, migrants, and LGBTQ folks. This was like in the late 80s, early 90s. America was not ready to hear her. In 1992, after she sang Bob Marley's War on Saturday Night Live, she took out a picture of Pope John Paul II and tore it in half and shouted, "Fight the real enemy." She was met with hatred in America from all corners. But America has now caught up. And now we hear her. If we really, we should have listened to her. Yeah. So this is just a Sinead O'Connor song.
This is the last day of our acquaintance. day of